Hey everybody, I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Free K-12 Education Talk Radio, a part of ACE-ED.org, our American Consortium for Equity in Education. Again, ACE-ED.org. That's where we put all our podcasts. That's where we have all our information. That's where we have our schedule. That's where we have our magazine called Equity in Access, our online journal, and all the information, all the wonderful stuff we do about equity pre-K-12. Again, I'm Larry Jacobs, and welcome to today's show. It's going to be a lot of fun today. We've got Mr. Ronnie Sarri. Now, Ronnie is an English teacher at Rye High School in Rye, New York, okay? And he teaches creative writing and composition and 10th grade English. And what's even more exciting, before that, he was a music journalist. Actually, I would say he still is. And he's the author of several books, including A History of Southern Hip Hop, which I was just looking up on the web, called Third Coast. He's really a smart guy. This is really cool. And he's a smart guy, but he's got smart kids. And he recently launched something they're calling the Empathy Project, which is project-based learning, and that's what we're going to focus on today, where he and some of his students are here to tell us all about it. Okay, so I'm going to bring each of them on. Okay, by the way, I want you to go over to ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Join our consortium. It's free if you're a pre-K-12 educator. Okay, it's really, really something we want your voice heard. Ronnie, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, Ronnie, it's good to hear your voice. You've been emailing so much. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm just fine, thank you. And before I get to the kids, and we will get to them, okay, obviously we're going to get to them. Tell us a little bit more about you. I tried to do you justice, but I didn't, okay? Go ahead. Just talk for a few minutes. Tell the kids. The kids may not know all this. Tell them.
You know, it's funny.
Here you go, kids. Mr. Sarig speaks. He's now going to tell you his background. Go ahead.
It's true, actually. It used to be when I had just switched from being a journalist to being a teacher, it was a lot more of my identity. So it was, I talked about it more. And now I'm, you know, maybe 13, 14 years into teaching, and there's kids that it just never comes up that I did this, you know. And so it's actually nice to let these guys know about it. So I started off, you know, out of college, writing, you know, wanted to be a writer, and quickly realized that nonfiction journalism was my thing more than fiction. And so I focused on, you know, they tell you to write what you know, and I was always big into music. And so that
obviously
became my thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I got my first, you know, professional clips pretty, like, I think, actually, you know, it's one of those, like, sounds like a made up story, but the day of my college graduation in the Village Voice, which is no longer in existence.
Oh, my God,
but
such a powerful.
A
lot of people don't even know what that was, the newspaper,
exactly, yeah.
Quote, Greenwich Village, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
Just an amazing newspaper. Go ahead.
Right, so that was my first professional article was published on the day that I graduated, so that was kind of a nice little launch. And, you know, and I went on from there. I ended up in, I was in New York, and then I ended up in a couple places in the South, and I, you know, wrote wherever I was. Ended up for a while in Atlanta, and actually while I was in North Carolina living in Raleigh, I came up with my first idea for a book. I wanted to, this was in the 90s, and I wanted to write about, you know, there had been a lot of changes in rock music in the 90s.
Wait, Ronnie, just to stop you, because the kids might get mixed up, that's the 1990s, not the 1890s, just so everybody understands that, you know.
Yeah, although the 1890s was quite a decade
not bad,
for music
not
as
bad.
Well.
Not bad, not bad.
So I decided, you know, I pitched an idea to write a book about these underground influences on rock music that had peaked up, that had shown their faces in the 90s. And I wrote my first book called The Secret History of Rock. But then I ended up actually right when that was published, this was like 98. It doesn't seem like a long time ago, but it's like ancient history to these kids, I think. But anyway.
It's before they were born.
Yeah, long before. So So then I ended up in Atlanta working as for the alternative weekly in Atlanta, and I was music editor. And it was right at the time when a lot of things were coming together in Atlanta. Nowadays, most people, if you follow this, you know, you would know that it's, you know, really the center of black music in America. And, you know, it's really the, you know, as much as any city, you know, it's really a central part of the music industry. Back then it was just starting to form, and I just happened to be at the right place at the right time. And particularly with hip hop, I, you know, became my sort of, my area of, you know, that I wrote about a lot. And so I ended up, you know, pitching my second music book on that, and that's what became Third Coast. And it's funny, but every time a book comes out, I end up moving on to another era. So by the time that book came out, I was already in the classroom teaching. So, so since then, since about 2006, I want to say, or seven, I've been teaching. Yeah.
Have you been at Rye the whole time?
No. So I was around in New York. I was in the Bronx for a year, and I was in one other district, and then I came to Rye. I've been in Rye about 10 years now. So.
Cool. That's very cool. And I realized as we were talking how we're showing our age, remembering the Village Voice. Okay. I just put that into perspective for everybody, and I think I'm right here. One of their great writers, if I'm not mistaken, was Gene Shepherd. Okay, am I right? Do you remember Gene Shepherd?
I don't remember Gene Shepherd.
Well, you may remember Gene Shepherd because it's him, his memoir, that is the famous Christmas movie, Christmas Story with Ralphie and the gun.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
And that's the kind of stuff he wrote. That's his stuff. Okay?
I did not know that.
He became famous in the Village Voice. Okay, but I'm talking back in the 1960s. Okay? And
okay.
1970s,
yeah,
that's the latest.
I didn't grow up in New York, so I didn't really become aware or read the Voice until the 90s or late 80s.
That's a huge deal, yeah. Okay, the Village Voice. And it was a gigantic thing. Let me get to the kids for a second, Ronnie. And so I'm so glad we got this together. Okay. Thais, are you there? Thais?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Thais. Everybody, you can take your phones off mute. I know what you're doing. Okay, Thais, my name's Larry, and you can call me Larry. How you doing today?
I'm good, and you?
Good. I'm fine, thank you. Okay, you all set for Christmas?
Yes, I am.
Such as we are these days with the pandemic, it's a pleasure to have you here. And by the way, Ronnie, I've decided not to give the kids last names. Is that okay with you? If you want to, you can. But I'm not going
to. Okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's probably what the district would want you to do anyway, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Now
so, Thais, and by the way, Thais, I want you to know this. I live in Maine. Okay, and I have a friend up here, a lovely lady whose name is also Thais. There you go. Right? And I think your name is derived, I think this is correct, from an opera. Do you know about this?
I have no idea. I heard it was Greek or something. I really don't know.
Well, I think you should check it out because I think it's a character or the name of an opera. Okay, and you'll figure it out one of these days, but just so you know that, okay? Thais, it's a beautiful name, okay? So welcome
Thank
to the show.
You.
You're welcome, dear. Let me go over to Aiden. Aiden, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Hello. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm fine. You all said, be honest with me, is Mr. Sari a good teacher?
He is a good teacher.
He's
I
not
enjoy
in the room.
All my
yeah, don't,
with him.
Yeah, okay, cool. He's good. He's cool. Right?
Yeah. It's a fun class.
But, oh, cool. That's good. That's good. Okay, that's all we can ask. Are you learning anything? Let me ask that. You learned anything?
Yeah, we're learning a lot.
Good.
Right now we're delving into all sorts of different cultures and stuff with different types of literature and short stories.
That's
and
really good because he's an English teacher. He's an English teacher, and usually that's the bailiwick of social studies. Mm-hmm. Ronnie and I are going to have to talk about that one. Okay, that's great, man. That's I love hearing that. That's like a cross-discipline thing. Laura, are you there?
Hi, yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Laura. I love your name. You know, that's the heroine in Dr. Zhivago, Laura. There's a
that's
beautiful.
That's exactly who I was named after.
There you go. Your mom and dad have good taste, and you got a beautiful song, Laura's Themed. I hope they play that for you every year on your birthday. Okay? That's pretty cool. That's great. I love your name. And by the way, my name's Larry.
Thank
I could
you.
Have been a Laura had I been a girl, but I'm not as beautiful as you are. I know it already. Okay? So it's really cool. And have you ever seen the movie Dr. Zhivago?
I'm waiting until my 16th birthday to see that. I don't know. It was kind of just something that I decided.
And that's cool. It's a wonderful movie, a classic movie, okay? But I want you to know that your namesake, Laura, in the movie is played by one of the most beautiful actresses there ever was, and that's Julie Christie, okay? So I think it's going to work out just great when you see that movie, okay? Good enough. All right, Dora. My Dora, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, Dora. I'm Larry. Call me Larry.
Hi.
Say hi, Larry.
Hi, Larry.
How you doing? Everything good?
Yes, everything's good.
Okay, now I'm going to go back, and I want all of you just real quick. Dora, say hi to your mom, dad, brother, sister. They want to hear their names. Go ahead. Go for it. I'm going to do each one. Go ahead, real quick. Dora. Hi, mom. Hi, dad.
Hi. Hi, mom. Hi, dad.
How about you? Do you have any brothers or sisters?
Oh, yeah, I have a younger sister.
And her name is? This is like pulling teeth,
Shayna.
Dora. Go ahead, do this. Say it again.
Her name is Shayna.
Say it again. Say hi.
Hi, Shayna. Hi, Mom.
There you go. Very good, okay. Laura, your turn.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Hi, Peter. Hi, Philip.
There you go. Okay, Aiden.
Well, you're easy with this one, because I have actually 7 siblings.
We have time. Go for it. I want to test your memory. Go ahead.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Hello. Ashley, Austin, Axel, Alec, Andrew, and Amber.
All A names. I love this. Your mom and dad are clever people. I love that. Wow, that's great. And are they going to get to the B's? Are they out of A's? Are they ever going to get to the B's, or is this it?
I mean, maybe if they have grandkids, we'll name them all with B names. I don't know.
You know, actually, you guys could break down the alphabet. Very good. And Ronnie, is there anyone you'd like to say hi to? Oh, excuse me, Thais. I'm sorry, Thais. Oh. Forgive me. Thais, do your thing.
There's someone I would really like to say hi to. My family can hear me.
Thais and I are going to be friends when all this is said and done. And Mr. Sarig, anybody you'd like to say hello to before we go?
Sure. I'd like to say hi to my wife, Danielle, my son, Ori, my daughter, Raquel, mom and dad, everyone, you know, hi.
It's like the Oscars.
Greet you. Like to thank my agent.
This is great. I love this. This is wonderful. All right, now let's get into this. Project-based learning. Ronnie. Okay, you're doing something called the Empathy Project. And by the way, can you see everybody, or is everybody in different places?
We're all in different places. In fact, our school is remote right now. So
I forgot about that, for goodness sakes. I forgot completely about that as I asked that. Sorry. Okay, all right, so you're all in different places, so I'll be able to handle this then that way. Okay, Ronnie, tell everybody, in your words as an educator, project-based learning, and then what is the Empathy Project? Go ahead, Ronnie.
Okay, so project-based learning is, you know, I would say somewhat all the rage in education right now, and that immediately makes me suspicious.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of, you know, trends that come and go, and, you know, so there's that. So I have to say I'm a little, I don't know if I would say a late adopter, but I'm a late believer, put it that way. Basically what we're talking about here is approaching learning not so much – about like the content, isolating the content and teaching directly the content, but more creating a real sort of authentic challenge for students. That's real life that actually we can actually do for real. And, that could actually help people. And that requires students to figure it out. I mean, the example that I've used several times in class is, you know, when you're in a job and your boss comes and says, hey, we need to do an initiative or something, and this is what I wanted to accomplish, and figure it out. You know what I mean? And that's your job, to figure out how to make that happen. And so that's kind of the way we've approached this. And so what happens is, along the way, you end up doing a lot of the things you might normally do in English, like reading and writing and, you know, that kind of thing. But you do it all towards a certain goal, and to add on to that skills, it's not only about the skills, but you're also working towards its problem solving as well, which is, you know, you don't often mm-hmm. get a lot of problem solving in English. You know, you might get that in science or in engineering, right? But you don't necessarily get that in English. So, and yet that's one of the most important skills that students need to develop. And two, it's one of the most fun things to do, right, in school.
Agreed.
And it makes school a lot more enjoyable. So, yeah.
I agree. So did you, when you started, and we'll talk in specific, and we'll define the empathy project in a minute, but when you started this project, did you explain that to the kids, or did it need to be explained?
Well, maybe the kids can remember better than I can. So I think I didn't explain the whole idea. I didn't say, hey, this is project-based learning, and this is what – it wasn't like that because I, you know, I didn't want it to be so self-conscious. I wanted it to be, again, an authentic challenge where, you know, this is something that we can do. Let's do it, you know, and let's see if you can figure this out. And so, yeah, so I didn't really focus too
That's
much
cool.
on defining what it is.
And that helps
yeah.
me put it in perspective. So now I want you to tell me what the – and by the way, if you want to – Ronnie, I'm going to let you kind of co-host this with me. If you want to bring the kids in any time, you know them far
yeah.
better than I do. Okay, just you bring them in any time you want, okay, and,
so,
in any
so
order
do
or
I,
whatever. Okay, but yeah. Why don't you now define what the empathy project is? You, Ronnie,
okay.
Mr. Sari.
Okay, and I will. And just as a question, if I'm going to ask someone, I shouldn't just open it up to anyone because you have to unmute them. Is that how it works? I have to say someone's
name?
I'm
not muting anybody. They're the ones
oh,
who
you're
are
not.
Muting themselves. Everybody's got an open mic, so just ask whichever student you wish to ask, and it could be
okay,
all five.
Great.
You say their name so they know to expect it.
All right, I got it. All right,
or
answer,
yeah.
So the empathy project. So here's the thing, like going back to what I was saying, I was always a little suspicious of the latest trends in education. I'm not that I'm super traditionalist or anything, not by any means.
I know what you're saying.
But
I know what you're saying. Everybody
I
knows what you're saying. Yeah.
I prioritize things that actually work, and you know, and I'm a believer in the old, you know, reading and writing, and that's how we develop our brains, you know. So I was a little suspicious, especially because a lot of what I had heard about project-based learning I felt like it really skimped on the English. For example, you know, say you had a project where students were going to go out and examine the environment, you know,
mm-hmm.
test the waters,
yep.
the local
Common.
Waters.
Yep.
And that's a beautiful project, wonderful, totally useful, and it can help the community. But then it was always like, and then they'll write up a paragraph about what they did. You know what I mean? It was never really a lot of reading or writing. So I was like, I can't do that. Like that would be a dereliction of duty to like, I need to be spending my full class period on teaching English, teaching reading and writing and literacy. And so that's why I was a little reticent about the idea of project-based learning. However,
mm-hmm.
the big breakthrough for me was realizing that I was thinking, okay, what project can I do where literature is just intimately woven into the thread of what the project. So that was one sort of non-negotiable, like that it had to be a project that was based in using literature. How do we use literature?
Hmm.
So then there was a second sort of angle that I came from that always, I love this, you know, and I think all English teachers love just to talk about this little scientific fact is about how, you know, there's been scientific studies on how reading fiction makes people more empathetic, right? And
mm-hmm.
this is kind
right.
of like we love to say that because it makes us feel like we're doing something essential, and we are.
Well, what you're saying
and
is
so,
accurate, so I'm going to let you go
yeah.
with that. Yeah.
Okay. And so right, and so that was the other thing. So it was like, okay, so let's tie in. How can we create a more empathetic? Well, let's start with ourselves. How can we become more empathetic? How can we then maybe foster a more empathetic school community and then even possibly the town itself? And so, and how can we use literature now, tying that back in, how can we use literature to do that? Okay, so that was really the germ of the idea. Now, beyond that, a big part of project-based learning is not to, you know, it's not about, like, here's your assignment sheet, do it. You know, it's about the kids figuring out, what does that mean? How do you make that happen? So literally, and this is where you came in a little bit, is, you know, I literally, had just the basics of an idea, and then our mutual friend Jill Akers kind of
hooked
us up.
I haven't mentioned yet. I'll explain in a second.
And,
go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, and you expressed interest in, you know, in your involvement, and so you sent off a letter as a challenge to the students saying, you know, this, you know, can you do this, basically? And this was, you know, the challenge was how, basically, the way I worded it, and this is, it's fairly much of a, just a shell of an idea. How can we use literature to create an experience that builds empathy among members of our community? So from there, it was like, you know, and then it was step by step, kind of working it out, like having students meet in groups and discuss, and what does that mean, and how does that happen, and what would that look like, and what, you know, how do you, what are the parameters of this, and, you know, that's how we built it, and I can take you through step by step, but maybe we'll, if you have a question about, I actually, you know, one question that, again, I have to go back, that I would like to hear from the students is how much, and I guess it really could be anyone, but maybe we'll start with Laura, say, and then we'll say, then we'll jump in if other people can jump in. How much were you aware of this thing that we're talking about, project-based learning? How much were you aware of that as a thing when you know when this project started?
Right. Is Laura the smartest of the? Wait a minute, Laura. Are you the smartest of the group?
No, I would not say that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just checking because you sound very, very bright. You go ahead. Go ahead, Laura. Let's hear.
Well, so I've always been a big fan of experience-based learning. I actually attended a school in the city that was their learning, like experience-based learning. We didn't, like, learn by a textbook or anything. We, like, experienced it ourselves. And so I've always, and I learned so much better that way, and I always found it really interesting because, like, you don't even realize how much you learn when you learn from the experience because, I guess, and you also, like, retain the information for so much longer. So that's why I always have been a big fan of experience-based learning. And also, actually, last year, which was ninth grade for me, at the end of the year when we went into lockdown, I wrote a paper about how I think that teachers should explore different ways of learning now since we can no longer learn in a classroom. And I was suggesting, like, experience-based learning. And there's a bunch of benefits to experience-based learning. So, yeah, I knew about experience-based learning before this project.
I didn't know that about Laura. I didn't know that she had written that paper.
I'm very impressed, Laura. And I have to say that's the kind of thing that teachers long for, okay, to have a student take, they call it, there's a term for it professionally, and it's called student voice, okay, and that has become something that's very important to educators, and you just articulated that beautifully, okay?
You
really did. That's really, I'm very impressed. And by the way, just that experience-based learning, okay, the term that professional educators use, okay, is called I think you're saying the same thing. It's called project-based learning, and it's abbreviated PBL. And that's actually what you guys are immersed in, okay? And it's a very popular thing nationwide, and Mr. Sariga seems to have done a pretty damn good job of it, all right? So that's pretty cool. Ronnie, go to the next one or whatever.
Thais, what – how much were you aware of this thing, this PBL thing?
I was very much aware of it because I have friends from all over the country, and they go to schools that just focus on project-based learning. And I remember from the time when I was in eighth grade, we did project-based learning in global history. So that was very nice. But I like the fact that project-based learning doesn't involve, like, all the textbooks, all the, like, extra just, like, reading, and just taking down notes, because it gives you a chance to have the freedom to explore what you want to learn.
Very good. Wow. Wow. I'll say that. Ronnie, next?
Yeah.
Dora,
you're not kidding. What do you think? Dora, what do you think? What's what was your understanding?
Well,
or?
Yeah, well, like I said, I was aware of project-based learning because we did it in eighth grade a lot, in English and in social studies. And I also like, you know, the freedom it gives you, because often you're forced to learn about topics that, you know, you're not really that interested in. And I think that definitely has you do a little bit worse in those subjects, because you're not really interested in the material. Project-based learning allows you to really learn about something that you're passionate about.
Passion, key word. Thank you, Dora.
Yeah.
May I say, I got to go to the A-team. The A-team, okay? Aiden of the A-team.
Yeah, I agree with, like, everyone. Project-based learning is always, like, always something that I see is more effective than other ways, because it basically just puts you in a situation where you have to learn it, and it's kind of more up to you, I would say, instead of just, like, me zoning out, kind of just doing a class because it's a class. Project-based learning basically puts the work in my hands to try to figure out with my class what we're doing, and just learn it firsthand, kind of more focused.
Well, that's pretty cool. And let me ask you, Aiden, since you're the last one who just spoke, okay, one of the things that educators like to see is collaboration, students working together to come to a common conclusion, or at least to come close to that. Did you feel like you were working towards that with anybody on this? I'm curious.
Like throughout doing our project, we've had multiple, like, breakout rooms and meetings with other students. Mm-hmm. We basically just all talk through our ideas, kind of in a brainstorm-like list, to create kind of like a creation out of all of them. We basically just went into groups of three or four and all shared our ideas about it, and then kind of just turned it into one project idea that we then shared with the teacher. And Mr.
Cool.
Thrigg then took all those ideas from every group and formed the Empathy Project based on all of our ideas. So it was very collaborative based in how we did it.
That's the way it's supposed to be, Ronnie. You should be proud of these kids.
Yeah, I am. I mean, I'm really thrilled. Again, I have to say, like, just to add to what I was saying about me not being fully convinced about PBL, that, like, a big part of it was just seeing how students took to it, and just what their, you know, sort of responses have been. That's, you know, that's really the proof in the pudding, you know, to see that they actually are into it, which is awesome.
But they're into it. They're into it. You can hear it in their voices. I'm curious, though. How did the project work out? I'm trying to think of the right way to say it. Okay, you wanted to show that via literature they could get empathy. Okay, and that empathy could be greater, okay, amongst the community, et cetera. What did the kids, and you can ask them, but what did the kids actually, your students, actually do in perhaps in their small groups or just in the whole group to make this happen? What was the actual project? Not the theme of the project, the actual projects. What got to come out?
Right, okay. So basically what we did, first of all, I should say that we're only – not even halfway through yet. So
that's okay.
So we could talk about, you know, and we talked, you know, Aiden mentioned the collaboration at the beginning. That's gonna, right now there's a little bit less collaboration because they're working on their independent, and I'll get to what the independent work is, but then at the end we're going to kick back into even more collaboration. So it's a whole kind of different facets. But so the first step was just to say, again, to throw that very sort of general challenge into their laps and say, okay, so we had, again, as Aiden said, we put them into groups and just had them brainstorm. So the questions were, okay, so that was the challenge. What are the parameters? What could this project look like? What would be the process? What is something that's doable right? And that's a big challenge, because once you start, once you let your imagination go, then it's, you know, oh, we're going to build a, you know, a state-of-the-art facility of, you know what I mean? It's like, what's actually doable that we can actually do? So, and then also, and then just simply, what does the final project look like? And so there was a first round, and the first round of brainstorm was a little rough, and what it allowed me to do was kind of respond and say, oh, okay, here's what one group said. So my question, and again, it was never like, no, yes or no. It was always like, here's a follow-up question to say, yeah, okay, well, here's your idea, but now my question would be, how could we do that? How is that possible? Or how does that incorporate the literature? You know, referring back to the basic challenges. So then it went to a second round of sort of fine-tuning, you know, what it is that they're going to do. And eventually, I think we got to a point where there were a bunch of ideas being thrown out. For example, like some of the most common ideas were, let's make a website, one. Let's identify issues that are in need of empathy. You know, what are the things that people don't maybe understand as well as they could? What are some of the works? What are some works out there that actually speak to those issues? You know, and then how do we respond to them? How do we involve the community? You know, et cetera. So based on all those sort of common threads that a bunch of different groups are coming up with, we came up with that, this idea. And so the project really is, so there was that collaboration level of determining what the project is. What we determined was, okay, so every student individually, first we're going to go through, we're going to identify issues, and we came up with a list of about a dozen different issues, everything from, you know, race to mental health issues, sexuality, different you know, issues like that. And and then students individually would choose one, or they could look into a few to sort of explore and to say, okay, let me try to find what works are out there about these issues, that particularly issue the types of works that will elicit empathy, not just facts, you know, not just fact sheets and information, but more stories. And so that's really what where we're in now. And what they've done is several things. One, one part of this stage has been to contact, to reach out to people. So so it seemed like one, a good place to reach out would be people that they know, people, either a teacher or a family member or a, you know, clergy or someone who they feel like might be a good reference for, like, if they sent them an email and said, hey, I'm looking into, you know, say, I'm trying to find a short work that really elicits empathy about the challenges of poverty, say, do you have anything that you might suggest that you've read that you think has really moved you? And so they sent out one email to someone that they know, either, you know, locally, and then a second email. They had to do research to find someone anywhere in the world, like a professor of, you know, of African-American studies, or a professor, you know, whatever it is, and asked essentially the same question of those people. And so they've done that. And a lot of them, you know, and I told them, like, this is an effort, and it's to do, and they're not necessarily going to get one, you might not get a response at all. And if you get a response, it might not be the type of stuff you need, but that's what you do. You go through, you throw a bunch of, you know, darts at the wall and see what sticks.
I know.
You know, and so, so they did that. And actually a lot of people did get good responses. In fact, just today, I asked them to CC me on their emails just so I could have a record of it. But in some of the exchanges, you know, when you reply, you don't always reply all. So, but some people did reply all. So I've seen the exchanges, and for Dora might actually speak about this, because she's had this great exchange with a clergy that she knows, and she's been just really amazingly supportive, and has actually reached out to colleagues of hers to get advice. And you know, and so it's been really, really amazing just to see the chain of emails.
Right, and one thing I do want to go to Dora in a second. I just want to ask you, Ronnie, and you know, we talked to your racism and gender and sexuality and all that, and not to get personal or anything like that. But are the kids? Is there a diversity amongst the kids that we're talking to? I don't know these wonderful students, Thais, Aiden, etc. Are any of them African American, whatever the case may be? I'm just curious.
Yeah. Well, so amongst this group here, I would say. We have one Latino student. I think that might be one Jewish student, maybe two. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But there's not. I would say in Rye. I mean, as part of, I think most you know, I'll leave it to the students to agree or disagree. But I think there's a general sort of awareness that Rye, New York, is not the most diverse place in the world. Where
mm-hmm.
It's a fairly affluent community. And it's fairly, homogenous in terms of,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of the socioeconomic level and the racial diversity. That, you know, of course, that's not to say it's, you know, there's definitely some diversity. But I would say I have only of the two classes, it's 51 kids that I'm doing this project with.
Well,
I would say is there's only one African American student, and there's maybe, I don't know. Five or fewer Latino students.
Right, and no matter how liberal all the kids are or conservative or whatever, okay, that puts a different perspective. If you did this project, students, I hope, understand it, if you did this in the South Bronx, it would have a different perspective, same project, different perspective. It's a very interesting thing that you're doing, and that's why I asked that question, to just get that impression of the demographics of the groups. You were going to ask Star or something. Go ahead.
Oh, so I was, you know,
yeah.
Well, before I do, I'll say that I think that that's the fact that I am a teacher in Rye. I mean, it kind of, there's great benefits. There's amazing kids and, you know, incredibly smart
this
kids.
Yeah, an example. Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, but there's also that challenge of like, certainly none of the kids, you know, faults, but it's like you live in it's often referred to as the Rye bubble, you know what I mean? And there's a bubble. And when you grow up, you know, you don't necessarily see the larger world. So that makes it even more to me important to do, you know, something like this. So, yeah. But yeah, Dora, if you, can you speak a little bit about the exchange you had? I don't remember the name of the person you were having an exchange with, but it was really interesting.
Yeah, well, I decided to search for stories about government persecution, specifically about the Holocaust,
mm-hmm.
and I emailed my cantor about it, and
the cantor at your synagogue, right?
Yes.
Or at a synagogue? Okay, go ahead. Yep.
And she was really helpful. She asked a bunch of her colleagues, and they sent me a bunch of short stories and literature about.
Wow.
About it.
I noticed, Dora, I noticed that one of the recommendations on the list was Edgar Carret. Did you recognize that's the writer that?
Yes.
I've used. We read two of his stories already in class.
Wow.
Earlier this year. So.
Wow, that's amazing. Go ahead, Ronnie. Do you want to ask the others? Or
So it does. I mean, I'm not sure. That's the one that I just stood out in my mind.
Yeah.
But do any of other? Oh, actually, you know what? Laura has a really interesting. What she ended up gravitating towards is different from anyone else's in the sub the 51. It's fair, and it's a very interesting story. So I'd love to hear her explain her process.
Laura.
Yeah, so I, a couple months ago, attended a leadership seminar held by a Columbia School graduate. It was, like, called Mentorum. And there was the seminar, it was, like, a Zoom with about, like, 30 people, and they were from all over the world, mainly India. But it was really interesting because out of all the people in the U.S., there was only a couple people that lived in the U.S., and one of them was a boy who – is now in college, and he went to Rye High School. And, so he wrote an article, which was like a petition as well. Like, he wrote it in, like, I guess, you know, yeah, it was the petition. And this was at the beginning of all the Black Lives Matter protests and movements.
Yeah, back in
and
February,
so,
March, yeah.
Yeah. And so I just, that really stood out to me. So I emailed him. His name was Zachary. I'm going to mispronounce his last name, but
Gawad.
Yeah. So I emailed him, and I got the article he wrote. So, yeah, very interesting.
Well,
and this actually resulted in the creation of the Race, Inclusivity, and Community Task Force at RIE, which the purpose is to provide, like, a school environment that supports all students and provides equity and opportunity. So, yeah, it was definitely successful.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask, and Lara, just since you brought it up, okay, when you just said the word equity and opportunity, and I don't know if you heard me at the beginning, but we are very much into equity here. By the way, you're speaking to a great many educators right now, okay, to superintendents of school districts all over the country and teachers all over the country, that sort of thing. And that equity word is a word that's used a lot. But I wanted to ask, since you brought up all about empathy and we're talking about this kind of thing, I'll just start with Lara. Lara, do you know what equity, when you hear that word, what does that mean to you? Well, you just mentioned it. Okay, what's that mean to you as a student?
For me, that means, I guess, being fair and impartial.
Okay. All right. Thais, do you have an idea on that one?
Can you repeat it, please? It's kind of laggy on my phone.
Sorry, say it again, babe. I couldn't hear you.
My phone is kind of laggy. Could you repeat, like, the last bit? Because it keeps
I will. There's a word that Lara used, and it's the word is equity. And we do a lot of work here at our consortium for educators about equity. And I'm just curious, okay, when you hear that word regarding school, what does that word mean to you? If you ever heard it before.
I'm sorry.
That's okay, babe.
I kind of know what equity means. Know it means something of value.
Huh, okay.
Or,
it is of value.
Like value or quality?
Okay, all right. Okay. Aiden, does that word mean anything to you? Because that's what teachers are basing everything on these days. It's not a test. I'm just curious. You're not going to make a mistake.
Well, I know that, like, equity sounds, I'm pretty sure it's something to do, like, there's two versions of equity, so it might be kind of a parallel to, like I think, home-type equity or something like that, like something to do with, like, housing. So it's kind of, like, I guess, quality.
It's a financial term. You're absolutely right. There is a financial term called equity. That's exactly right. That's not what they're talking about, but you are right in that definition. Okay, Dara, what about you?
Again,
it's not a quiz,
equal,
my dear. Just what do you hear when you say that?
It's just equal opportunity in schooling. Equal opportunity to get into colleges, a chance at fair education.
When teachers or educators hear the word equity, okay, what they're referring to is giving every student, no matter what they, every student, whatever they need to learn, so that at the end, okay, everybody has had the opportunity and the same access to education, and so that the educators do the best they can to make sure that happens. That's equity, and it has a lot to do with empathy. Because we don't have the empathy, the feelings the towards other people that we need, we can't do that because we can't understand it. Would you agree with that, Ronnie?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the two, you know, it's interesting because I've been thinking about that because, you know, with your consortium focusing on equity, I was thinking about, because the project that we're doing is not specifically about equity, but
it winds up being
picture,
about it in the end. It winds
exactly.
up being about it in the end. Okay,
yeah, the
and that's
you,
why I
the
asked the question of the
empathy.
Kid.
Yeah,
and because you can't have one without the other. You have to understand where people are coming from, and none of you gave a bad definition. all of you, you know, it's an open-ended question. And Aiden, you were right. Equity does have to do with housing. When you build an investment in your house, you have equity in your house. Your house is now worth something more than it was. That's another way to use the word, but not in the way educators use it. This is very interesting. Okay, I want to ask
it's
the
funny.
Kids.
It's,
go ahead.
It's funny if I can add. I mean, no slight to anyone, but it's interesting because it highlights a cultural issue. When you talk about equity, you're talking to kids in Rye. They may probably have heard that term more often being used in terms of financial.
Let's buy a bigger house. We have great equity in this one. Yeah. Let's get
a
second mortgage.
I mean, it's interesting. Words have this cultural weight to it.
Yeah, and this is important as you understand racism and gender. What's the word I'm looking for? Gender bias, that sort of thing. Okay, mm-hmm. You have to understand the people that you're dealing with. I want to ask the kids. All right, you're talking about empathy. All right, I'm going to start with, who should I start with? Let's see, we'll go to Aiden first this time, okay? Aiden, okay, we're talking about empathy. And you've been doing this, I assume you're halfway through, you've been doing it since September. What have you learned from all this so far? Aiden.
I kind of learned that empathy is something that you can feel for anyone. I would say empathy is just the ability to kind of feel bad, like feel for someone, even if you don't necessarily agree with, like, their actions, essentially. So, like, it's just gaining an understanding of someone else, even no matter if you agree with them or not, it's understanding why they did something. So just empathy can come from a lot of sources to a lot of people, and I would say through this it shows that one of the best ways of empathy is by seeing another perspective. Like through a book where you can read from people from experiences that you never had yourself.
What you need to do, Aiden, is hang up from me and call President Trump and President-elect Biden and give them your definition, and we'll be a lot better off because what you just said. And if you've learned that, you've really done something, because Democrats right now hate Republicans and Republicans hate Democrats. They both think the other one is just ridiculous in their thinking. But we have to have empathy for both. And if you have empathy for the other side, you begin to understand where they're coming from. And that's a step towards understanding. So my advice is, Aiden, just drop out of school, run for president next time in 2024. Is that a good idea? Don't tell your parents I said that, Aiden. What do you think?
I'll certainly consider it.
Consider it. And remember, you've already got your cabinet and they all have A names. So don't worry about that. Okay? It's perfect. Okay? All right. Taiz,
I should say the Hoffers.
Yes, go ahead.
I think Aiden's the youngest, right? Or no? Are you the youngest?
I'm the youngest. They're all eight of us.
And I've known a few of them. I wasn't around long enough to know the oldest ones, but they're all brilliant. So having them as a cabinet would be excellent.
How old's the oldest, Aiden?
I believe around 28. It's hard to keep track of all the ages.
Okay, I'm sure it is. But you've got the A team there. That's what you'd call your cabinet. Thais, I want to ask you, you're doing this project-based learning, experience-based learning. What have you learned from this?
What I've learned from both product-based learning and this empathy project is to take a step back and listen to people, because your mind might be clouded about what you think about, like, how what you went through and how you went through that, and that you may think that person's wrong because of what they've gone through. But you need to learn to work together in order to, like, use both instances and both of what happened to each person in order to fully understand how that situation could affect other people, in order to have the mindset of thinking, oh my goodness, I can understand you, and we could do that to work together in order to help other people understand how we feel and how other people feel about the situation.
Well, it's so important. Thais, I want you to run for vice president on the Aiden ticket. Okay, you'll be our first Latina vice president. Does that sound good?
Yes, sir.
Pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Okay, now we'll go to the next governor of New York. Laura, are you there? The first female governor of New York? Okay. What have you learned from this?
I feel like this project just really put things into perspective, and it made me realize the importance of empathy and how it like plays a role in everything that goes on, and especially things that we still need to improve in Rye and everywhere, but empathy is really the root of, I guess, all of these, like, it can solve majority of the issues that we are facing in Rye, such as racial inequality, religious inequality, and, like, the list goes on and on. But I just feel like if people had a better understanding of how the other side felt and this will be accomplished, like, to an extent, this will be accomplished through our platform, but I think if they just have a better understanding of how the other side feels, then that can elicit more empathy in Rye and begin to solve these issues.
Yeah, and I'll say something, Laura, okay? I know Rye is your world right now, but believe me, you're going to go to college and you're not going to live your whole life in Rye, more than likely, okay? And there's nothing wrong with Rye, and the same things that you're seeing there are all over the place. It goes way beyond Rye. Dora, my friend, do you want to run for mayor in New York? Let's hear your platform on what you learned.
Well, it's pretty much what everyone else has said, but empathy can help solve pretty much every problem we're facing right now.
Mm.
If people just learn to work together and focus on helping other people instead of
understanding other people.
Yeah. Understanding other people and helping them as opposed to focusing on their own self-interest.
People look at things different. If you don't believe me, I've had several people on the show who are African American, and you talk to them, okay, about them watching, I think we've all seen this, George Floyd back in February. Okay, the way a white person looks at that versus a person of color, no matter how much empathy you have, they are totally different. Okay, and it's more visceral, et cetera. When you start to understand how other people see things, you're going to be a lot better. Ronnie, you should be very proud. This is working out so well. These kids are fabulous. Okay,
I'm amazed.
I'm amazed. Don't be amazed. You're a good teacher. You're a good teacher. But I want to ask you something. Okay, you're doing this wonderful project. Okay, and this comes up a lot with project-based learning. Okay, you're doing this wonderful project. How does it fit in and to the curriculum? And kids, just so you know this, Mr. Sarig and all your teachers have to follow a curriculum, okay, that's a standard in New York, okay, that guarantees that you're learning the right things, okay? And you can't, as a teacher, go too far outside the curriculum, okay, because you're responsible for that. Ronnie, as you teach, go through this project, how's it fit? And I'm doing this so all the other educators listening can understand how it fits into the curriculum, in this case, New York.
Well, yeah, it's a great question. I feel really lucky, and I know this is, I'm going to say it, and it's going to sound like I'm, kissing up, but we happen to have we happen to have a superintendent who's quite progressive in his thinking about education. And he, he's been honestly in several different ways, but one of the ways has been to really, try to encourage project-based learning. We talked briefly about Jill Akers, who's a consultant who's helping us with that. And, there's just been a lot more of that, and he really believes in that. And so, the guy at the top's got my back. You know what I mean? No one's gonna be like, well, why aren't you teaching a book? You know what I mean? Like, no one's gonna be saying that because that's just not the culture right now. And so that's good. That's a big thing to begin with. Second thing is that we are, we're doing a lot of. With a lot of the kids are reading and writing as they normally would be.
Mm-hmm.
They have, in order to find a work that speaks to them, they have to read, several dozens possibly of, works to kind of find one. And so that in itself is
you know, that's a lot of interaction with text. And then the third thing I would say is that part of this sort of, one of the sort of progressive things that we're doing is we're revamping our curriculums. And so each, like last year, the ninth grade revamped their curriculum. This year, actually, the 10th grade has revamped its curriculum. And what we did, though, to shift, and again, I sort of was skeptical, but I kind of liked it,
yeah.
Which is which is
like me when I was
of,
teaching, skeptical of everything. Yeah.
Right. But in, so you know, I do see value in teaching great works, right? But what we've done, we're not taking that
like
out
Dr. Zhivago.
We're not taking that out of the equation by any means, but. What we're doing is instead of creating a curriculum that says, okay, first you do this work, then you do this work, then you do this work, we're creating a curriculum where we just actually presented it to the district just like last week, where it's four basic units of study. The first unit, for example, is perspective. And for example, we did a lot of reading of in short stories from different cultures around the world.
Ronnie, we got about 3 minutes left. We got about okay. 3 minutes left.
The
Go
second
ahead.
Unit is empathy, and this project fits perfectly. So essentially, long story short, it's just kind of revamping the curriculum so that instead of being focused on the works, it's focused on what are the outcomes, what do you want to achieve, and then finding the works that work. For that purpose.
It's really so great. I'm so glad it's working out. One last thing. We got just a few minutes left. Dora, it's time for you to grade the teacher. He grades you. Now it's your turn. Dora, A, B, C, D, or E? What is he? Where is he? Dora?
Definitely A.
Definitely an A. Okay. Really might be college ready. Let's find out. Lara?
Yeah, definitely an A.
Another A. All right, this is good. Aiden, the A man. You got to come through, Aiden. What's the word?
I mean, definitely an A. Not 100, because I haven't gotten all 100. But, yeah, definitely pretty up there.
I like the way you think, Mr. President. This is very good. Thais, how would you grade Mr. Sarig?
I would give him an A, but I do learn a lot from my friends as well. So.
Okay. Good enough. You know, you guys are terrific, all four of you. You're wonderful, okay? You're just terrific. And I know it's a tough, crazy year with the pandemic and hybrid learning and remote learning and all this stuff. It's just great. And I'm so glad you have a wonderful teacher like Mr. Sarig. And you are really something, Ronnie. So we got to go, but thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay?
Thanks so much for having us.
Oh,
thank
my
you.
Pleasure.
Thank
Yo,
you.
You're welcome. Be
thank
good,
you.
Everybody,
thank
and
you.
Happy holidays. You're welcome.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, I'm hanging up on the kids. I'm hanging up on Mr. Sarig, and I guess I'm hanging up on you, too. We mentioned Jill, my friend Jill Akers Clayton, okay, works at Fielding International. She knows education backwards and forwards. Okay, Fielding International is it's an architectural design firm in education. Okay, and they design learning spaces. All right, and it's my kind of, Jill is one of our champions of equity in our magazine over at ace-ed.org. Okay, she does amazing work, and I meant to say all that at the beginning, but she won't care I just want to say thank you to Jill Akers Clayton for getting that done over at Fielding International, and learn more about her in our magazine, Equity and Access, over at ace-ed.org. Ronnie, you're a terrific teacher. Kids, onward to college. Mention my name. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, part of the American Consortium for Equity and Education. Thanks so much for being with us today.